This is the Community Forum, a public affairs presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation.
Parents are looking for options to continue their children's education while the physical location of schools are closed. This accidental homeschooling has spiked interest in cyber and distance learning options. Here to look at what the lasting impact might be is Lindsay Burke. Lindsay is director of the Center for Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Virtually every, if not every, public school in the country is shut down. Students are at home. What does this situation mean for homeschooling? Because a lot of parents and a lot of students are now experiencing it for the first time.
Yeah, the sheer volume of what we're seeing in terms of school closures across the country is really breathtaking and unprecedented. If we look across the country, Education Week's been doing a really good job at tracking this. We know that nearly every state in the country has closed schools, and that includes both public and private schools to a large extent. So about 47 out of 50 states right now have closed entirely, and in those remaining three states, those districts have also closed schools. So we're talking about more than 125,000 physical school buildings that are shut currently. And that's affecting about 55 million K-12 age kids across the country. So you're absolutely right. Everyone has been sort of forced into this accidental homeschooling mode that we're all currently in. And so the question is, what does that look like long term? Will this have a lasting impact on the way that both families and policymakers and schools think about education delivery?
In terms of that education delivery, Lindsay, now students are turning to devices, their computers, their laptops, their iPads, whatever, in order to get instruction. We do, of course, have a growing and robust set of cyber charter schools around the country. Is this a situation where those cyber charter schools and the students in them maybe have a leg up on those students who are not enrolled in such schools?
I think there's definitely an argument that that is the case, that those students and schools are used to online delivery. What's also been inspiring in a way is to see those online cyber charter schools and online organizations like K12.com, for instance, partnering with traditional public schools across the country to deliver content and to make sure there is as much continuity as possible in this time for students. So that's been really great to see. And just by way of sort of providing some base figures so that we understand where we are, about 300,000 kids across the country were already enrolled in fully online cyber charter schools prior to the pandemic, about 300,000. And then if you add students who were already homeschooling, we had about 1.6 million kids who were already homeschooling prior to the pandemic. So overall, that's about 3.3% of the population. Will we see that number increase long term? I think we'll see a bit of an uptick, but I also think that some families are going to say, it just wasn't the right fit for my child. It wasn't the right fit for my work life environment. And they'll probably move back to their prior school arrangement. So I don't think we'll see long term a major disruption of K-12 ed, but I do think we'll see an increase overall in homeschooling.
In the short term here, Lindsay, are any states or school districts, to your knowledge at this point, making provision that since they cannot have the students in the brick-and-mortar schools, if parents want to enroll their child for the balance of the school year in one of these cyber schools or take advantage of distance learning, any provisions being made to allow some sort of financial credit or provision for those parents and those students?
Well, we know that some states and districts are thinking about that right now and figuring out whether or not they can have students switch over to whatever online options are already in that state. So I know it's something that states are actively engaged in thinking about. The other thing states should consider moving toward is, for the remainder of the school year, providing emergency education savings accounts to families. Families right now across the country are paying for public schools that they cannot access. They can't physically access the schools that their taxes are paying for. And so there's a good argument to be made that during the pandemic, those dollars should go directly to families, and families should be able to use those funds in an emergency education savings account to pay for private online tutoring, online learning courses, maybe special education services and therapies online for students who need it. And so that's an emergency targeted reform that state leaders should think about moving on quickly.
Looking at that sort of a reform, if it's good in an emergency, is this an opportunity for state and school district policymakers to start thinking about allowing parents and students to have more educational options on an ongoing and permanent basis?
We're slowly starting to see that conversation really come to the forefront now, that this is good policy in a pandemic, but it's also good policy long-term overall, and that dollars should be made available directly to families, that education funding generally at the K-12 level should be student-centered and portable, means that when emergencies happen or when something's just not the right fit generally for a family, that they can quickly shift the way that they're accessing education and really secure that educational continuity for their children. And so hopefully this does, hopefully a silver lining long-term, start to catalyze reform in the way that we finance education and really sort of drive home this idea that, yes, we should publicly fund education, but that the public funding of education does not require public delivery of schooling, that we should separate the financing from the delivery of services and enable every family across the country to access education choice options that are the right fit for their children.
We have been talking with Lindsay Burke, and Lindsay is director of the Center for Education Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Lindsay, tell us a bit about the Heritage Foundation and also where can folks go on the web to read your work?
Well, the Heritage Foundation is a broadly supported conservative public policy think tank. We work on a wide range of issues, not just education policy, but you can go to heritage.org to see everything that we work on and also check out the education department specifically. We have a new initiative up for families called the Curriculum Resource Initiative that you'll find on our website that has lots and lots of resources available, online learning options, curricular resources that can support families during this time.
Lindsay Burke of the Heritage Foundation. Lindsay, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
This has been a presentation of the Montrose Broadcasting Corporation. The views expressed on the community forum by our guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the moderator, staff, or management of this station.